Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this is the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Robert Winfrey, and I need to thank everyone for joining us before we get too far into this. Believe me, I am well aware of the volume of MMA-related podcasts that you have to choose from, and the fact that you choose ours is equal parts humbling and somewhat baffling. I mean, there's several that are worse out there than the quality that is produced here. There's a few that are better, too. I can be honest about that. And you guys choose this one, and God bless you. I thank you for it. All right, I hope you all enjoyed having Saturday off. There was no UFC event on Saturday or major MMA event, to the best of my recollection. And like I said, I hope you enjoyed that because starting next Saturday, we got 9 weeks. 9 straight weeks of events. The last 2 weeks of this month, every month in September, and the first couple in October. Yeah, my bank account is grateful for the work. My psyche and my love of the sport would appreciate a break every now and then. So we'll see how that plays out. But we're kicking things off with UFC 202. The rematch of a fight that... Well, quite frankly, I didn't care about the first time, and to be perfectly honest, I don't care about this time either. I know. I am ants on at your picnic. I am the rain on your parade. I just don't care. But we'll be previewing that entire card, and it's a pretty solid card. Good co-main event. There's a couple of decent fights on the prelims. I'm not complaining about this card, really, all that much. I complain about the philosophy behind the McGregor-Diaz rematch, but that's a whole other thing that we can get into later. But if anything around UFC 202 strikes your fancy, if anything related to MMA in the news has come out and you want to talk about it, you have a question, a comment, anything other than a long string of profanities, really, I'm okay to take your call. I'm very interested to hear your perspectives. If you would like to do so, the number that you can call in at is 323-657-0901. Once again, area code 323-657-0901. If you would like to call in using Skype, there is a Skype icon on the Blog Talk Radio player page. You have to click on it, and then it's going to open up 3 or 4 different boxes of dialogue. You're going to have to click through, but you go through all that. You'll come up with my switchboard, and that will get you on the air. And we're all going to cross our fingers and hope that Blog Talk Radio and Skype aren't having another lover's quarrel, because... has happened in the past and probably will happen in the future. All right. Here with me, as usual, my partner in crime, the hardest working man at 411mania.com, because he's in all the zones, people. Seriously, I think all of them he has contributed to in some way or another. Jeff Harris is with us again. How you doing, Jeff?
Good evening, everyone, and wait till I show you all my toys.
All right. First up, here we go, main event, rematch between Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor at welterweight. Yeah, I told you guys at the top, I'll say it again here. I didn't care about this fight the first time at all. And honestly, I care probably a little bit less this go around. It's an utterly meaningless fight. We've got a champion who is now fighting two weight classes above the division that he is champion of, and is probably going to go at least a year between fights in that division, assuming he returns to it at all, and I'm personally not convinced he can make the weight safely. And Nate Diaz, who's I don't know if I'd say he's a top five lightweight in the UFC's, in the UFC.
He's a lightweight!
But he's a lightweight. But he's certainly top 10, without too much controversy or issue there. And now they're both fighting at welterweight again, because money. Jeff, you were the only one that I recall from our, from the round table and certainly from my interactions with other people that are interested in the sport. When they fought last time at UFC 196, you stood up in front of all the people and said, "Conor McGregor's going down." And I imagine you were kind of soundly laughed at a little bit, and I need to say this because I need to make this clear. Conor McGregor has a massive fan base, and the vast majority of them are fine. I have no issues with them. You support who you support. There's a small percentage of the fan base of Conor McGregor that are sycophants to the point of borderline cultism. They do nothing but parrot what he says, and honestly, it grates on my nerves. And that's not just because it's Conor. Any fans like that grate on my nerves. And I imagine you took your fair share of derision, but you stood up and you said, "Nope, Nate Diaz, on very short notice, is going to beat Conor McGregor." And lo and behold, Conor McGregor submitted in the second round by Nate Diaz. Do you think anything different is going to happen this time around?
I think Nate Diaz is going to win however he wants. All this nonsense about training and all these adjustments he's making, it just sounds like nonsense to me, because haven't we seen enough evidence before that a lot of this training nonsense is just that? It's nonsense. I mean, I hear these fighters go on all the time about all these special drills and all these special things and techniques that they do in training. Training is not the same as being in a real fight. And we often see when a real fight happens, a lot of those things that happen in training go out the window or just don't come to fruition at all. And I just look, for all of the crap about training, he was still fighting a guy who hadn't been seriously in training camp at all, who came in on less than 2 weeks' notice and beat him. Because for all the training, it's not going to make up for those intangible factors that have a big impact on the fight. Height, reach, size advantage, and just sort of natural talent and abilities. Or just sort of how on any given night, look, I'm not a Diaz fan, but between these two fighters, I would pick Conor McGregor every day of the week in terms of who I prefer to watch fight. And just who I can stomach in general. I do not like the Diaz brothers, and I've had sort of an aversion to them for a long time. But Diaz does have good boxing, and he's good at fighters goading other fighters into doing what he wants them to do. And Conor McGregor always has a penchant for fighting with his chin and leaving his chin in defense wide open. He was doing that at featherweight, and that was fine for a while because he was fighting smaller guys, but now that height, size, reach advantage, it's all gone against Diaz, and it didn't help him any against Diaz, and he's fighting him again at welterweight, and I can't for the life of me understand this. I don't understand any of this. Diaz is going to win, and I don't know how Conor McGregor's psyche is going to recover. I mean, his ego and pride were clearly damaged the first time that he felt he needed to have this fight again at welterweight. I don't know what he's going to do after this fight, quite frankly, Robert Winfrey. So I don't know how he can recover from another loss to Nate Diaz. I really don't. If it was that, I mean, just look at what we've been through since that fight and just all the back and forth. How can his ego survive losing to Diaz again? I just don't see how it can.
I don't know. I'm not a psychologist, though that must be an interesting profession. Not in general, but just specifically as it pertains to someone like Conor McGregor. That would be an interesting client if you're of the psychological persuasion. I actually need to rewatch their first fight to make my specific prediction. So I reserve the right to change my opinion on this one, is kind of what I'm getting at. From what I remember of their first fight, first of all, neither of these guys understands defense pretty much at all. They McGregor, because he hits hard enough that it just doesn't matter if he gets hit. He's got a good chin, and it's okay if you hit him because he's going to hit you, and he's going to hit you harder. And Nate Diaz, because he's only been stopped once via strikes, if memory serves, he's just got a crazy chin, and he's happy to brawl with you. Neither of them care about defense. They're both going to get hit. They're both going to bleed again. I'm not sure how Conor McGregor is going to fight him any differently than he did the first time. Now, there might be some differences. One, his weight will probably be more managed. Two, he won't expect Nate Diaz to fall over. And then when he doesn't, have no backup plan, have no plan B. Because, seriously, what I do remember from that first fight, McGregor still hits very hard, and Nate Diaz has an unbelievable ability to absorb punishment. And he's going to hit him, they're going to hit each other, but McGregor had no backup plan when Nate Diaz didn't just fall over after being struck on the chin. He kept coming, and McGregor didn't quite understand how to adjust. He couldn't switch the angle of his attack. He didn't have another strategy. He just kept trying that same tactic, and when it kept failing him and he started getting tagged back, it all just kind of fell apart. Clinch is a position in this fight that's going to favor Diaz. It's not where McGregor fights best. On the mat, Diaz has a pretty substantial advantage. I'm not of the camp that believes McGregor's jiu-jitsu is terrible, because let's be perfectly clear here. There's not enough evidence to suggest that. He punched himself out, so he got very tired against Diaz the first time, and Nate Diaz's jiu-jitsu is really good. I mean, there are some very talented fighters.
In his wrestling aren't.
No, that's a pretty big weakness that the Diaz brothers have always had. And even he was able to stuff that takedown from McGregor because, again, look, when you get tired and you get rocked, everything goes out the window. So there are degrees to which I'm lenient and forgiving about his technique. And the fact that he got smoked on the ground by Nate Diaz is not anything to be ashamed of. A lot of people get smoked on the ground by Nate Diaz, especially when you engage him on his terms.
I don't know. I feel like the way he just went right into a brawl with Nate Diaz was beyond stupid.
And that's kind of how McGregor fights. He baits you into punching with him, and he just finally ran into someone that he couldn't outpunch. I'm not sure. And my big thing here is I'm not sure of the adjustments McGregor can make. I mean, there are certainly things he can do to make the fight maybe swing his way a little bit, but...
But we always hear about adjustments, changes and stuff, and then Michael Bisping goes on like 10 days notice and beats the middleweight champion. I mean, how does that even happen? I mean, I mean, a guy, Luke Rockhold, like, smoked Michael Bisping before. And Bisping had, like, nothing for him before. So, I understand that training's important, and sometimes the things guys work on in training pay off in the fights, but I listen to all these interviews and I hear all this stuff about training and changes and drilling it. Like, I hear about Travis Brown and what he does with Edmund Tarvidian, and I'm like, it sounds like crackpot nonsense to me. It sounds like, you know, they're talking about getting sold a bill of goods by, like, snake oil salesmen sometimes, Robert. And I know, I mean, look, that's purely an outsider's perspective, a guy that doesn't fight, doesn't train, yes. But, I mean, I'm just saying, to me, it's all about the results. It's about the results that come when they step into the cage and come fight time. And I'm like, where's all this stuff they talked about? To me, it's like Suicide Squad. They hyped up Jared Leto as the Joker so much. They talked about all of his method acting and all this stuff he did to get into character. David Ayer had to separate Jared Leto from the rest of the cast because he was just being way too method. And then where the hell was this Joker in the movie? He didn't exist. It was all just nonsense to me sometimes. What am I missing here, Robert?
Well, not a whole lot. There are degrees to which training is important. There are degrees to which game planning is important. Unfortunately, I don't want to say overblown. It gets talked to death. And that dulls us to the reality of, you know, adjustments that can be made and, you know, maybe different training partners, different training methodologies. Because we hear it from everybody basically every time, and frequently it doesn't lead to anything. It doesn't change all that much. And so we get kind of jaded to it. And in the case of McGregor here, he's not going – I mean, there's a couple of things here. One, he's not going to submit Nate Diaz.
I'll give you an example of the thing. I hear about a lot that fighters say all the time. I was worried too much about what he was going to do and not about what I do. Like, what the hell does that even mean? I don't even know what that means. It gets said so much. Like, that's the magical key. That's the crux of everything. I mean, well, if that's what you have to do, why are all fighters making that mistake? Because apparently I've heard that so much it's cliche. Like, what is it about that? What does that even mean?
Well, that's more indicative of a psychological thing about how you pull the trigger, about what you do in the cage. I mean, like, for example, if you're a pretty good boxer and you're fighting Mirko Krokop in his prime, you're terrified of his left high kick, so maybe you don't fight the way you would normally because you're so worried about getting your head kicked into the stands. It's kind of what that means, and I agree with you that it gets talked about so much. It gets overblown. As far as my prediction for this fight, this comes down to three things, a couple of things. One, how is Conor McGregor going to win this fight? Let's be realistic about a couple of things. He's not going to submit Nate Diaz. And bear in mind, I am well aware that I'm probably jinxing this entire fight by saying that. Watch McGregor pull off a flying go-go plata in the first round just to make me look like just because. But mind you, he's not going to submit Nate Diaz. I'm not sure he can beat Nate Diaz over 5 rounds. I'm not saying Conor's conditioning is bad. I have no evidence, no concrete evidence one way or the other. He's gone 3 rounds in the UFC. He's gone into the 5th in the past. So it's not that he can't do those, but how's he going to do that, you know, against Nate Diaz? Diaz has superb conditioning. For all the positives and negatives about Nate Diaz as a fighter, and there are both, His conditioning is never an issue.
I disagree with that. I think it's been an issue for him before.
Apart from the Dos Anjos fight, apart from that fight, that fight he
looked out of
shape. He gasped and got beat up.
His cardio was not there in that fight at all.
No, that one statistical outlier aside, though. I mean, his 5-round fight with Benson Henderson, I mean, he just got the dog snot beat out of him for 5 rounds, but he was still there in the 5th round fighting.
Yeah.
And he was not gassed out in that fight. So I'll give you the Dos Anjos. Yeah, that's true. That is, he looked pretty bad in that fight all around. Generally speaking, it's not much of an issue, and I don't think McGregor can beat him over 5 rounds. I don't think he can win a decision. Now, he might.
Great.
I'm not saying it's impossible, but knowing what I know right now, which means he probably has to stop him. Now, it's possible for him to win, 3 of the 5 rounds. I find that more unlikely, but possible. And I'm not sure he can stop Nate Diaz with strikes. I mean, it took Josh Thompson not one, but 2 head kicks that landed flush. Rewatch the fight between Diaz and Thompson. He kicks him in the head, and Diaz doesn't care. It takes the second kick to actually get some kind of reaction out of him. The man's got a chin. I just think Diaz has more ways to win. I could be wrong. I freely, again, I'm not trying to bag on McGregor. The guy has a legitimate skill set. He hits very hard. He has a good understanding of striking technique, not just winging punches. He understands how to strike a little bit. Defense aside, his offense is usually pretty good. I'm just, I went with McGregor the first time around, and that wound up biting me. I just have to imagine that if Nate Diaz stepped in on, 10 days notice and beat Conor McGregor. Now, granted, McGregor was training for a different weight class and a very different type of fighter. Rafael Dos Anjos is a very different type of fighter than Nate Diaz. So, it was a short notice fight for McGregor as well. But Diaz wasn't even in training camp for that. I mean, he was like way between fights, if memory serves. Look, McGregor can win this fight. That's very possible. But I think this might be one of those stylistic things where he's just not got this appropriate style to beat Nate Diaz. And I'm going with Diaz.
Look, Matt Hughes never beat Dennis Hallman.
Dennis Hallman beat him he beat him at least twice with first round submissions.
And I would say, Hallman is really not even half as good as Matt Hughes's. But again, there are all these outliers in MMA where it's not about who's the better fighter, it's about who's the better fighter on that night. Even beyond that, again, there are just all these stylistic and matchup issues that I think will sometimes prevent a naturally skilled fighter from beating one who's maybe not quite as skilled in other areas, but just because of physical issues, because of when they meet in the cage stylistically, I think the style of their fighting naturally favors Nate Diaz. And that's another reason why I'm picking Diaz here.
Yeah, look, Conor's game plan for victory is hit them until they fall over. Now, that's an oversimplification, and there's certainly, different ways he does it. Again, I don't want to make it sound like he's not a good fighter, that there's not a whole lot there, but that's his game plan, simplified down to its base elements.
Well,
and
Conor Conor
does
good things with his feet sometimes. I think Conor does some very creative stuff with his movement and his quickness especially. He has great quickness. But, the man is skilled. He's more than just a sloppy brawler, but I think he did get very sloppy when he was in brawl with Diaz. So there you go.
But yeah, and I think my point there is I don't think you can beat Nate Diaz with the game plan of hit him until he falls over. I'm not sure. I've only seen him fall over once. And he's been in the UFC for a really long time. And yeah, he's lost. The guys that beat Nate Diaz, it's not knocking him out.
You can't. You have to sort of do more like what Carlos Condit did to his brother, Nick. You can't stand in front of him. You can't just move forward with your chin wide open and box with him and just punch yourself out. You have to be measured. You have to be methodical, deliberate. Stay on the outside. I mean, I would say stay on the outside. Pick and choose.
Well, that's
shots.
More dangerous against Nate than it is against Nick. Nick Diaz is a phone booth style fighter. Nate actually likes fighting from the outside a lot more than his brother
leg
does.
Shoot. Nate Diaz doesn't like to check leg kicks either.
No, yeah. Leg kicks, good takedowns. I mean, you can't be stupid about taking Nate Diaz down. Otherwise, you're going to get swallowed up by his jiu-jitsu skills. But if you know what you're doing, you know, fight him kind of from the middle distance, either way out in kicking distance or kind of phone booth style fighting. He's less comfortable there than his brother Nick is. And then, yeah, get some takedowns. Be careful in the clinch, but especially if you're Connor. I don't think Connor's clinch game is what Nate's is. And anyway, I got Diaz. A lot of people are excited for this fight. I hope you guys get a good fight. Their first fight, I didn't care about it, but at least it wasn't boring. I was very, very grateful for that. All right, last thoughts on this, Jeff. Then we're going to move on to Glover Teixeira and Anthony Johnson.
I've said everything I need to say.
All right. Co-main event certainly has title implications. Anthony Johnson and Glover Teixeira. Anthony Johnson, I believe, is coming off of that loss to... No, he knocked out Ryan Bader. Okay. Yeah, he knocked the stuffing out of Ryan Bader. Oh, that was amusing. But he's fighting Glover Teixeira. Teixeira coming off of that knockout win over Rashad Evans. He's on a 3-fight winning streak. Johnson's on a 2-fight winning streak. These two guys hit very, very, very hard. I imagine these are the two hardest punchers in the division. Glover Teixeira is a slightly more well-rounded fighter than Johnson in terms of his overall skill set, but he likes punching. Unfortunately, Teixeira is a bit predictable with his boxing, with his punching and his boxing setups. Somebody's fallen. I hate to say this and potentially jinx it, but if there's a fight on this card apart from the main event that I'm betting has a finish in it, the firepower between these two would stop a horse. And I think they're probably going to be able to stop each other. Teixeira's got good wrestling, but I don't know. I don't think it's good enough to kind of monkey with Johnson. Teixeira's defense is a little more lax than Johnson's, and Johnson has a slight edge in firepower. This should be a good one, but I think I'm going to go with Johnson. I do need to rewatch some of their last couple of fights to get a better feel for it, but I got Johnson here. I think he'll be able to stop Teixeira. Again, though, these two guys both like hitting each other. They like hitting their opponents in the face. They both hit hard enough to end it with one blow. This is not the fight to go to the bathroom during. This will be a pretty good one. But I got Johnson via stoppage. Looking forward to it, though. Jeff, two former title challengers. Who do you is this Rumble's fight or is this good old Super Glover's?
This is a tough fight because in this fight I see two very evenly matched top quality light heavyweights. You had two of the perennial top five contenders for the last several years here, and both men have knockout power. I think just in terms of who has more pure one-hit power, I would definitely give it to Johnson here. Glover Teixeira is a very good MMA wrestler, but like you said, I don't think it's going to give Johnson a lot of problems like Daniel Cormier was able to. It's a tough call, but I'm going with Johnson. I think I see it as a tough fight. I could see it going a couple different ways, but just because like Johnson has that stopping power, and he's good at mixing it up against well-rounded opponents, and he's well-rounded himself. Look at what that fight with Phil Davis, that was an amazing comeback story for him, because considering what had happened to him before and making it back to the UFC, and I wasn't really expecting him to just fluster Phil Davis like that and just completely shut him down. So I'm feeling Anthony Johnson here. I'm just going to pick Johnson, even though I think it's a tough, closer fight than many would expect.
Yeah, this isn't a gimme for either guy. The other advantage Johnson has, I think, in this fight is diversity. Glover's a pretty one-dimensional striker in the sense that he likes to kind of lead with this right hand that he's almost off balance with, or followed up with a left hook. There's a fair amount of tape out there. Better analysts than I am have pointed out this tendency. And Johnson's more diverse. He's got uppercuts. He's got power from both hands. He's not afraid to throw high kicks and smack somebody in the face with it. This is an interesting fight, but I think I got Johnson. This is a really good featured fight here, actually. Rick Story, back in action. This fight was not changed around at all, was it? No, it wasn't. Okay. This is a fight that you say these two are fighting on paper, and you think, well, okay, who fell out and who's stepping in on short notice? But Rick Story's fighting Donald Cerrone. This is a good one, guys. Rick Story's career has sadly been plagued with injuries, Tim, from fighting consistently. And it's a real shame. This is a guy who, for a long time, was the only loss on Johnny Hendricks'
record.
He has been with the UFC for a long time. His UFC debut was back in 2009. He's had a five-fight winning streak. Six, that's six, actually. He's had a six-fight winning streak in the UFC. He's on a three-fight winning streak. It's just he's had periods where he's been both hot and cold. He's lost a couple of tough split decisions. I thought he beat Kelvin Gastelum, actually, in their fight, if memory serves. That was a rough setback. I think the Campman fight I scored for him as well, but I'd have to double-check that.
Let me see. Yeah.
So he's had some tough decisions not go his way. Bear in mind, when I say I scored those for him and he didn't get them, neither of those were clucky. Those were tough. They were close fights. So it just not had them quite fall his way. But he's a tough guy, powerful wrestler, and physical strength. Rick Story's physical strength is just it's bizarre. I mean, it's almost like you can't even believe it. This guy finished an arm triangle choke from inside his opponent's guard. That's how strong a squeeze he generated with his arms, basically, from guard, forced that guy to tap out to an arm triangle choke. That's not a lot of guys who have the physical strength to pull that off. And on the other hand, you've got Donald Cerrone, who is just awesome. Donald Cerrone's awesome and has been for several years now. Cerrone is 2-0 up at welterweight in the UFC, but Rick Story is easily the best guy he's had to fight since making that move. His other two opponents, Alex Oliveira and Patrick Cote, and neither of them is quite the caliber of Rick Story. The move to welterweight has done Cerrone a world of good. This is a really tough fight. Cerrone usually struggles with wrestlers, good wrestlers, mind you. If you're kind of a ham and egger, then yeah, it's not going to be a problem. Elite level wrestlers who can take him down, who can avoid his guard game, have had a history of success against Cerrone. Cerrone also, and I'm not sure the degree to which this is true at welterweight, mind you, but at lightweight, he was soft to the body. There's proof of this. There's empirical evidence of him being hurt with body shots, much more so than hurt with head shots, though he gets rocked to the head. I imagine it's slightly more lingering effects from that ATV accident he was in that resulted in so there were some internal issues. I think he had part of his intestinal tract taken out. And look, I'm not criticizing the man for being soft to the body necessarily.
Rick Story isn't really a guy we see go to the body all that much.
I disagree with that pretty firmly. Story goes to the body a lot.
Okay.
Anytime he gets close, he has powerful hooks to the body. It's a big component of his game. He slowed down Thiago Alves with those. He used them to pretty good effect in his last fight against Tarek Saffiedine. Story has some pretty heavy body work. His issue is going to be closing distance. Cerrone is going to try and keep this fight a little bit longer. But if Story gets close, close is where Story will be able to do most of his damage. He'll have to watch out for the knees. Because Donald Cerrone is just Cerrone's awesome. I'm really not sure about this one. This one, it's a great fight, but in terms of figuring out who's going to win, both guys have plenty of legitimate paths to victory. I'm going to go with Rick Story here. I think Cerrone being a bit of a slow starter, the work that he's done around that notwithstanding, I don't know. Cerrone still doesn't respond the best to pressure, especially if it's this is weird because I normally harp on guys for being stupid with their aggression. But the more aggressive you are and kind of the less sense you make, I think the more Cerrone struggles with that. And Rick Story is generally a pressure fighter. Combine that with it. I'm leaning towards Rick Story. This could go either way. This is not definitive. And I still am reserving the right to change my mind. But as I sit here, as I think about it, I'm just going to lean towards Rick Story and look forward to a great fight. Jeff, I'm 90% sure you're going with the cowboy here. He is your favorite fighter, after all.
He is my favorite fighter. I'm picking Donald Cerrone. I have no reason not to pick Donald Cerrone here. Yes, Rick Story he is strong. He does have very good wrestling. But this isn't the type of fight where Donald Cerrone doesn't show up. Cerrone's fought good wrestlers before, and he's beaten him. As long as the title isn't on the line, I'm picking Cerrone to win. Cerrone wins again. Cerrone, the cowboy, is awesome. So Donald Cerrone, every day, all day, against Rick Story.
Donald Cerrone is indeed awesome. There, that is not in dispute now, and I don't want to know what he'd have to do. No. Even then, he loses in glorious fashion.
All right, so there you go. He's even awesome when he loses. He goes out on his sword. So there you go.
Yes.
But look, I mean, that first fight with Benson Henderson is still a classic to me and one of my favorite fights ever. And it wouldn't have been awesome. Cerrone did put in quite the effort in trying to stop Bendo in that fight and couldn't do it. So that was an amazing fight. maybe not favorite of all time, but he is my favorite active fighter in the UFC.
He only earns that. Hang on. Dan Henderson is still technically an active fighter.
Yeah, there you go.
Once Henderson retires after the fight with Bisping, win, lose, or draw, he said he's retiring. I would love for him to take the belt and retire and then just to kind of monkey with the UFC. I also, because I think that would be hilarious if that situation plays itself out like that.
I mean, come on. If he were to win, I doubt he would retire.
I think
no matter
he would.
What he says.
I mean, normally I'm with you in that fighters, you know, are tremendous liars. Something about this scenario, though, the ability to go out actually on top, to finally get the UFC belt, and to kind of give the finger to the UFC as he does it. Because
really,
if he...
I don't know. I don't really think that gives the finger to the UFC.
Well,
we'll
not in a
all.
Major way, but it would leave that division in the biggest lurch possible.
I mean, technically, Bisping winning the title has already done that.
That did a number on it, but if your champion actually retires and vacates the belt after beating Michael Bisping, one of the most shocking title wins in the UFC in UFC history, was Bisping actually claiming that belt. If he gets knocked out in the first round against Dan Henderson, and then Dan Henderson retires, what's the fight you make for the vacant title?
I would say Jacare Rockhold.
So would I, but Bisping was the guy right before him who just lost it. And I mean, there's just so many arguments
made. I mean, look, it's not perfect. It's not ideal, but I mean, you gotta play with the cards you got.
I'm just saying that would be like if he could leave that division in this even greater kind of like tornado of uncertainty,
I mean,
and what exactly are we doing? I think he'd do it.
Look, it was 7 years ago, but Dan Henderson still beat and knocked out Michael Bisping. So you have to realistically consider it, because anything can happen in a fight on any night. Dan Henderson is, you know, he's older and slower, but he still has enough power in his hands to put anybody to sleep. Anybody. If he can connect.
I can't help but think about scenarios like that, because
look,
it's been mentioned before.
Look, if Dan Henderson wins, he would be my favorite fighter of all time. So there you go.
I just have to think about that as well, because the middleweight division has devolved into utter chaos over the last like 18 months.
Right.
And the sport in and of itself is fundamentally insane. So,
yeah.
All right. Next up, we have a replacement fight. Hyun-Gyu Lim is fighting Mike Perry. Now, you may not know who Mike Perry is because he's making his UFC debut. This was supposed to be Hyun-Gyu Lim against Sultan Aliyev, which is a pretty good fight. Aliyev, he lost to Kenny Robertson. Yeah, still a good fight. Hyun-Gyu Lim is a pretty good fighter. Unfortunately, he lost that decision to Safdie. He's coming off of the TKO loss to future UFC welterweight champion Neil Magny. But, you know, Safdie and Magny are top fighters. Mike Perry is not. I think Lim's going to be able to work those knees in the clinch that he likes so much, knock him out probably in the first round, and yeah, Lim's good for a fight. I mean, all of his UFC fights have been watchable fights. He just needs some consistency. And, you know, I would have picked him over Aliyev too, probably. I mean, Lim's a massive welterweight. This guy is huge for that division. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to this one a little bit. I imagine there's going to be a first-round finish here. And those are the appropriate substitute for entertaining fights, as if it ends quickly. I accept that as an appropriate substitute. Jeff, is the newcomer going to score what would be a substantial upset?
I'm not predicting that. I'm picking Lim, but who knows? Maybe Mike Perry will surprise us.
All right, and kicking off the main card, we have another replacement fight. This fight was supposed to be Tim Means taking on Sean Strickland. Strickland had a knee injury. He is out. Means now fights Sabah Hamasi. That's how I'm pronouncing it until I know otherwise. He is American, but I'm not sure. With a name like that, there's an ethnicity behind it that will influence pronunciation, and I don't know what it is. So I'm going with Sabah Mohasi until I hear otherwise, which I will on Saturday. So hopefully, so next week, if I'm just butchering this guy's name, I apologize in advance. Mohasi's on a 3-fight winning streak. Had a few appearances for Bellator. I don't know enough about him to pick against Tim Means in this case. Means lost to Matt Brown, lost to Neil Magny. He had that terrible loss to Danny Castillo, but he should never have fought at lightweight, Means. That was an insane cut for him. Knocked out John Howard. Yeah, no reason to pick against Tim Means. Tim Means a good, kind of gritty in your face. He and Matt Brown fight very similarly. Different weaknesses. I'll take Means over a newcomer that I don't know anything about without too much problem here. Jeff, what do you got for this one?
Tim Means. Yeah, Tim Means.
All right. On the prelims, there are at least two very good prelim fights here. First up, the main event of the Fox Sports 1 prelims, Cody Garbrandt is fighting Takeya Mizugaki. Both these gentlemen have pretty good boxing backgrounds. And look, I like Mizugaki. I really do. Mizugaki's a fun guy. He's always good for a fight. But he's in over his head here. Cody Garbrandt is a better striker, a better wrestler. I'm not sure how Mizugaki could win this fight. He's just... I don't see it. Everything that Mizugaki does well, Garbrandt does better. Garbrandt, first round finish. It should be a decent fight, though, while it lasts. And Garbrandt's on the ascension, so he's worth watching. Even in fights he should win. You got to pay attention to elements of his game, see how he's improving. At women's bantamweight, Raquel Pennington is fighting Elizabeth Phillips. Phillips. Her only UFC win is over Jessamyn Duke, and Jessamyn Duke kind of sucks. That's kind of a gimme for Pennington, who's on a pretty good run. At featherweight, Chris Avila will fight Artem Lobov. Why is Artem Lobov still in the UFC? Someone explain this to me. That man, not only is he terrible. Okay, terrible might be an exaggeration. He is not at all a UFC-caliber fighter. Well, you know, I used to be able to say that. Used to mean something, too, but not so much anymore. But outside of the occasional freak show fight, he is not UFC-caliber. He's 0-2 or 0-3 in the UFC because he lost to Ryan Hall. He lost a follow-up fight. He's just not good. Just not good. But Chris Avila, I believe, is making his debut. This is do or die for Lobov. At women's strawweight, Courtney Casey is fighting Randa Markos. That's a good fight. That's a really good fight. I'm going with Markos there. But Casey's a decent prospect for women's strawweight. The other fight that's kind of worth talking about and paying attention to, the main event of the Fight Pass prelims, future UFC welterweight champion Neil Magny is fighting Lorenz Larkin. Magny on a really good run. He is, 5-6-8-1 in his last 9 fights. Had a 6-fight winning streak at one point. His only loss in the last 2 years, more than 2 years, geez, is to Damian Maia, who is very good. Lorenz Larkin is a very different kind of fighter than he is a very technical striker. I pick Magny because Look, I don't call the man future UFC welterweight champion purely as a joke. I started off that way, but, man, he's good. He's getting better. I think he'll beat Larkin. Watch him make me look like an idiot now, but I got Magny there. Also at welterweight, Colby Covington is fighting Max Griffin. I believe this is Griffin's UFC debut, so I will go with Covington, who has a very good UFC record. His only loss is to Warley Alves. And kicking everything off at middleweight, Alberto Uda will fight Marvin Vettori. I'm going with Vettori until I know more about that gentleman or if he has a different way he would like it pronounced. All right, Jeff, there's a couple of really good main events for each section of the prelims for this card. What are your burning desires? What are you looking forward to?
Man, Cody Garbrandt versus Takeda Mizugaki. You know, are we going to continue with Garbrandt's ascension up the bantamweight ladder? Neil Magny versus Lorenz Larkin is a good fight. I mean, you know how big of a Neil Magny fan I am right now, so I love that fight. So we have some good talent spread across the prelims. I mean, Garbrandt versus Mizugaki and Magny versus Lorenz Larkin, those could easily be main card fights, honestly. Take out the bottom two, put those on the main card. You have, a much more attractive pay-per-view card, but the card's really just being sold on the strength of the top two fights.
Oh, specifically the actual top fight. If this does less buys than their first fight, that's got to be viewed as a pretty substantial.
Well,
and bear in mind, when I say
this is a borderline one fight. I mean, in terms of the main pay-per-view card, it's borderline one fight card.
Between now and Saturday, this event struggles to maintain interest from top to bottom.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. It's borderline, but looking forward to it.
Again,
and let's all hope.
Those fights in the prelims, those are legit great fights. Those are great matchups for the division. And that's really a huge opportunity for Mizugaki, if you think about it. If you think the setbacks he's had to fight a guy who's, you know, who everyone is high on right now, like Cody Garbrandt.
Yeah, this is a bit. Yeah, I agree. This is a huge opportunity for Mizugaki. If he does knock off Cody Garbrandt, I mean, he's not getting a rematch for the belt after Dominic Cruz stole his soul, but it would easily be one of the most impressive and important wins of his career, hands down. All right, that is. We are missing a fight from this card. There was supposed to be a fight between Ning Guangyo and somebody, Marlon Vera. It's not a bad fight. Ning Guangyo, I want to segue this into this particular discussion about what happened here. Ning Guangyo, who was supposed to fight Marlon Vera on this card, tested positive for trace amounts of clenbuterol. However, despite that, there will be no disciplinary action taken as a result of this positive test.
My understanding is that it was based. It could have been from something in his diet.
Yeah, and I do want to talk about this briefly. And for as much crap as I've given USADA at times in the past, when they get it right, that means I have to acknowledge that as well. Otherwise, I'm not being fair. I'm just bashing on them. There is an issue specifically in Mexico and China with cows being injected with, I believe inordinate amounts might be the appropriate word, of this drug, to the point where even, you know, if it's cooked thoroughly and consumed, it can still show up in your blood tests. Warnings about this were issued to various NFL players a year or so back when a bunch of them were kind of either vacationing or there was something in Mexico and quite a few NFL players were down there and they had positive drug tests because the meat they were eating was from animals that were so injected with this stuff that it was popping up in small amounts within their blood work or their urine samples. I don't know how the NFL does it. Now, USADA in this case, taking into account the fact that he lives in China, that the amounts he tested positive for were extraordinarily low on the parts per billion model, which is how you do that. That's how it's measured, is parts per billion. They decided that he will not face a suspension, and I need to very briefly say I believe this was handled correctly in this particular instance. However, to all of us who are also very skeptical, let's remember this, because if Ning Guangyo pops for a similar substance related to it, you know, that comes from a different source, we need to potentially revisit this. But as it stands, I think this was handled appropriately. And fighters, you know, be very, very aware of what you're taking into your bodies. If you have any control over the origin of your meat, especially beef, stay away from it if it's from China or Mexico. There's demonstrated histories of beef products from those places causing this issue with drug tests. Worth noting, but I also think, again, it's worth saying that USADA has, in this instance, examined, they're not jackbooting this. They examined the circumstance and they arrived at what I believe in this case to be the appropriate conclusion. It's just worth pointing out that when USADA gets something right, they need to be acknowledged for it and it needs to be praised just as much as pointing out and kind of hammering them when they screw up. You have to do it both ways. That's how people learn. That's how systems get better. Jeff, I know you're a big believer that everyone is juiced to the gills. Do you think this was handled appropriately by USADA?
I mean, if that's the conclusion they came to, I don't know what else to say. I'm always skeptical. Like, I want to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, but I feel like history has proven otherwise, and I hope, like, these guys aren't taking things. And even though they came to this conclusion, I'm still skeptical, but I mean, I have no reason I have no reason to believe it wasn't handled correctly. And like, when Andrew Graham says, like, oh, these things, the testing dates and times of the test results coming in are suspect, I don't know if that's true. But then again, I don't work there. So who knows?
I will say this. Occasionally, the return dates for testing are somewhat convenient. On the other hand, I also understand that testing on that level, that comprehensively, for that large pool, takes
US
time.
200.
No, it wasn't, but Lesnar's double failure coming out after the fact, convenient. Again, I'm not saying there's a conspiracy. I'm not even accusing them of gross impropriety. Occasionally.
It's a big crap storm regardless, Robert. So I mean, I wouldn't really say it. Lesnar still got the fight. It was still a huge card, and the card did big money, mainly because they still had the Lesnar fight. But again, that's why we have USADA. I mean, the sport needed a watchdog. We have it now, so there we go. I mean, you aren't going to catch everyone, and you aren't always going to catch them out of competition. I don't think they should be criticized if guys aren't, because here's my thing. It's not USADA's fault. It's not the UFC's fault that Brock Lesnar, if he was taking something, it's Brock Lesnar's fault. All right, I mean, let's put the blame where it belongs, for one thing.
Oh, yeah,
You saw it as doing its job, okay? Testing dates, blah, 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 what they're testing for, blah. Okay, yeah, all right. But it's not their fault that Lesnar was taking something he shouldn't have. It's not their fault John Jones was taking something he shouldn't have, or that he wasn't doing his due diligence with his supplements or whatever.
That's on the athlete, not on the.
And it's not on the UFC. It's not on the UFC either. The UFC is a fight promoter. They're trying to promote fights. Okay. I think the problem is that the UFC couldn't be. When you think about it, the UFC could not genuinely be its own regulator when it comes to out of competition drug testing. I don't think they were the right ones to do it themselves because they're fight promoters and they want to book the fight. You need someone who
have a pretty clear vested interest that runs contrary to fights falling apart at the last minute.
Right. So I feel like that's why you needed an independent organization like you started to come in and handle all of that and give them the power to do it.
Yeah. I mean, look, I agree. The decision to kind of go with this program was a step in the right direction. Let's just keep reminding ourselves that it's a step. It is not a destination. USADA and WADA are far from bulletproof. It's a process, and the process remains ongoing. All right, Jeff, any other major news in the MMA world that we should talk about?
Major fight change for the next UFC pay-per-view after – UFC 202, and Robert, it wasn't CM Punk withdrawing from the fight and forfeiting the fight. It was actually Ben Rothwell, who is now injured and off of UFC 203. He's been replaced against former champion Fabricio Werdum in a rematch with Travis Brown. So that's the new heavyweight fight for that card. And I'm sure Mark Radulich is thrilled because he still gets another boom heavyweight fight on the card.
This wasn't a boom heavyweights fight the last time they fought. It was a five-rounder. Now, since that fight, Werdum got better and Brown got worse, but I'm not anticipating a boom finale to this fight, one way or the other. And look, there is plenty of time left for CM Punk to get injured. Just put it that way. Nick Lentz and Mirbek Taisumov are on that card. That's a good fight.
Another big bantamweight fight got announced. John Dodson and John Lineker are going to fight.
Woo!
And that's a fairly good fight for both guys. I mean, Lineker has been looking fantastic at bantamweight. That could be a big, important fight for both guys.
Yeah, that's a really good fight. Those are two strikers of very different skill sets. Those are two powerful punchers. Those two guys hit very, very hard. I'm interested in that one. That'll be interesting. That's a good one. I'm happy about that fight. All right. If there's nothing else, I suppose we should go ahead and wrap up here with plugs. So if there's nothing else, Jeff, you saw Pete's Dragon, didn't you?
I saw Pete's Dragon. I think it's getting a little overrated, but I think it was decent enough. I don't really have a great affinity for the original, but I thought the new one was fun. I think perfectly acceptable family movie, and I would say it was even – at least it was – I'll say this. In comparison to Suicide Squad, it was more competently made. Even though I did like Suicide Squad, had its problems. So you can check out my review of that, Pete's Dragon. Check out my column on George St. Pierre. Oh, that's the other thing we didn't really address. George St. Pierre has entered the USADA testing pool, so even though he doesn't have – it's not confirmed he's returning to the fight game, he is getting back into the USADA testing pool, and he's not going to have any exemption period like Brock Lesnar. So he will be that implies that he is heading toward a resolution where – he will be fighting again at some point, basically.
That'll be interesting to see if that pans out and where he goes if it does indeed pan out that way.
He did tell Bloody Elbow that the UFC offered him a fight with Michael Bisping. That was a fight his camp apparently contacted Bisping about. But now Bisping is fighting Dan Henderson, so that's off the table for right now. So, I don't know. But it's very possible we will see GSP making a return to the fight at some point. I'm sure the new owners in the UFC would welcome him with open arms, because he is still one of the top UFC draws of all time. So, but we'll see. It's still not confirmed. He doesn't have a fight lined up.
I imagine he hasn't signed a new contract yet either.
Right. So certain matters have to get resolved before to make this a reality.
I don't want to know how much they're going to have to pay him, because the man has an exclusive sponsorship deal with Under Armour. He's not going to get an exclusive deal with a unique deal with Reebok. He's going to get the crappy base rate for wearing Reebok.
Well, I mean, for all we know, Reebok might want to sign him to their own deal.
He's got a deal with Under Armour. He can't. I mean, he would be in violation of his contract with them if he just signed a new one. There's issues in place. They might want to sign him, but
Do you know his contract with Under Armour? Like,
I imagine if it allowed him to sign and endorse a competitor like Reebok, this I don't think it would be an issue. Then I think
I don't see why Under Armour would be. If the UFC has an exclusive apparel in cage apparel deal with Reebok, why would Under Armour freak out over him wearing Reebok apparel inside the cage?
It's not so much as it is the massive loss of income for GSP.
Well, that's up for UFC brass, his management, and for GSP to work out. I'm not worried about that. It's like one of the last things I'm worried about. That, and if they want him to fight again, that's something they're going to have to figure out.
My point there is he got paid very well by Under Armour to wear Under Armour products in the cage and to get them on that.
My understanding, Robert, is a lot of fighters were getting very well paid by their sponsorships. That their in-cage sponsorships that they don't have access to any longer.
Correct, but none of them are GSP.
But I mean, look, these guys are UFC fighters, cost of doing business, and it just seemed like that to me. A lot of mediocre fighters were getting fat on really nice, lucrative sponsorships for that premium airtime that they're not allowed to get anymore. Because I mean, it's UFC's airtime. They have the say over what's on the air.
It's a deal than the average UFC fighter gets, because the returns on those for them are extraordinarily poor.
But look, something Matt Mitrione said in an interview once made it sound like that, like the UFC gave him an offer that I think would have had money essentially making up for what he was losing in sponsorship dollars for after the Reebok deal, but not necessarily more money on top. So I'm sure they could give him some sort of setup that they could come to some sort of financial agreement that would sort of make up whatever issues there are with Under Armour there. And I don't think honestly, it's not something I'm too worried about. It's just something they're going to have to figure out if they want him to fight again. If he's serious about fighting again and the UFC wants to promote his fights, that's what has to happen. It's that simple.
Yeah, well, and again, the compensation is going to be a pretty big story with that fight because, you know, George ain't cheap. Never has been, never should be.
Now we know, look, the UFC was sold for $4 billion. Its value is possibly valued even higher. So that's going to change things going forward. There was that other story about some lawyers trying to set up a labor union, a fighters association for the UFC. I don't know how far that's going to get right now. We'll see where that goes, but fighters are calling for money fights now. They want money fights. They want a piece of that $4 billion now. They don't want to take the fights that make sense. They just want money fights, even though they're not money fighters. Guys like Tyron Woodley. Tyron Woodley's not a draw, but he thinks he's doing money weight fights. He thinks he's doing money weight fights now and doesn't have to fight Stephen Thompson.
Pretty bad if you're starting to sound at least a little bit like what is it, Mark? All those old.
Okay, I'm probably losing a bit of my connection, but that's my stuff, guys. I'll talk to you later. Thank you, Robert. We'll check in next week.